At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Yeah. Karen Reed, we're talking about that again today. Toxic relationships, specifically. The narcissist playbook, it is almost painfully predictable. Gaslighting, manipulation, victim playing, and recruiting flying monkeys who help them attack or discredit anyone who dares oppose them. Karen Reed is accused in the tragic death of John O'Keefe. And from the interesting 10,000-foot perspective, seems to be following this playbook page by page. From controlled narratives and portraying herself as a whistleblower hero to weaponizing her supporters as flying monkeys against critics, Karen's tactics raise some pretty big red flags. But how can we recognize these toxic behaviors clearly, especially when they hide behind circles of innocence and conspiracy claims? Psychotherapist Siobhan Scott is joining us to untangle this messy psychology behind Karen Reed's alleged narcissistic traits. We cannot, of course, diagnose her or say she is by any means, but we can say, this behavior seems to kind of resemble this type of behavior, and let you guys be the judge, but that's kind of where it's at. This is all kind of opinion-based and conjecture. Siobhan, when we're looking at this and just kind of what I've been seeing as this kind of textbook playbook stuff when it comes to narcissistic behavior, especially coming out of a narcissistically abusive relationship. I'm speaking on general terms. I'm not saying she was in one with John O'Keefe, but if she was, theoretically, this seems to be following a lot of it, not just in the terms of that the relationship, you know, ended and the breakup and all the things that go along with that and that type of dynamic, but John's dead. It feels like she's kind of following it almost like he was still alive in terms of the deflection and victim blaming and the flying monkeys. What's your thoughts on this case as we dive into this conversation?
You know, you can certainly read narcissistic traits here. I think you put that really well. And one of the things about narcissism, as with most things in psychology, it exists on a spectrum. Mm-hmm. And so you find some people that are extremely narcissistic and other people that are mildly narcissistic. But that's a personality disorder in the cluster B section. And as you and I talk so often, the cluster B people are the intense, dramatic people who cause a lot of trouble in society. Mm-hmm. And the other personality trait that's cluster B that jumps out at me is the borderline personality. Mm-hmm. Because the borderline is characterized by intense, dramatic, romantic relationships with a lot of jealousy and rage episodes. Mm-hmm. And that was what, when we got the list of those, you know, 53 angry, verbally abusive text messages, that looks so borderline to mm-hmm. me, even more so than narcissistic. But yeah. But as with most things in the cluster B categories, you can have traits that are blended from mm-hmm. these different disorders.
One could be narcissistic personality and even narcissistic personality disorder. One could be one could be both, essentially, and have a
one
bit of both
could have
going
traits
on.
Of both, and yeah. they may not meet full and mm-hmm. as you said, we don't know this unless you sit down and do an assessment with the person,
sure.
get their entire history yeah. and, you know, look at all these things. But one can certainly have traits from narcissism and traits from borderline. And so that's that's kind of what jumped out for me.
Yeah, and we're not saying that the Karen is this by any means. It's just a discussion of the topic of what these traits are. And my point on this is it doesn't necessarily, it doesn't make her a killer if she has these traits, but it certainly, it explains a lot of things. It explains a lot of the reactions that we see that otherwise can kind of feel chaotic and out there. Like, what are you doing? Until you kind of put it to the roadmap of these definitions, then I go, oh, this is why the reaction is like this. And then you can almost predict reactions based on those principles, which is what I've been finding very interesting as I break this case down and look at the relationship with John O'Keefe and Karen Reed. And there's a lot to break down here. Karen's public narrative about this whole thing, pretty much from the beginning, well, slightly after the beginning, before she, you know, after she was saying, I think I might have hit him, I could have, I might have clipped him, and he didn't look mortally wounded to me. Said a lot of kind of damning things at the beginning. We get to a lot of contradictions with Karen Reed, specifically about the night in question where everything happened. A narrative that begins with not even remembering dropping him off to then, oh, I dropped him off and I went home, to I dropped him off, I waited there, and I saw him get up to the door and stick his head in. Then it's, I got what was there, listened to the music for a while, listened to U2 specifically, and then saw him get in the house. And either A, I thought he was okay and he's going to go in there and I'm feeling sick, so I'm going to go home, to I'm really angry at him and I waited 10 minutes and left in anger. All of those things.
Yeah. And she was assuming he was in there having sex with someone.
And you know, that too.
So, and that's such a borderline thing. And then the other piece of it, because people are complicated, you throw in alcohol use disorder, which removes all ability to filter what we say. Mm-hmm. When people are drunk, they're unfiltered and more prone to this emotional, you know, instability. So there's a lot that seems so odd. Mm-hmm. And yes, when you use the term flying monkeys, again, not a clinical term, but a social movement, this thing about everybody defending her and seeing her as this, you know, whistleblower and crusader for justice and all of that. It has a really bizarre quality. That's, I think, what makes this case so much of a circus.
My question on that is, I mean, her narrative has changed so many times. And now we've seen the judge is going to let all those clips from all those interviews into this trial. How they're going to be presented, that's up for anyone's guess. But if the jury is able to see them, they're going to see her contradicting herself left and right with all these public interviews. We certainly do know that narcissists, the narrative and their image is bar none the top thing on their list, no matter what, above kids, above anything and everything, really, above others' well-being, above anyone else's reputation. It doesn't matter as long as their narrative is the one that is what people are believing. But they don't seem to really get that, you know, people can compare past narratives. They can compare the past things that you've said. And it's not like this is something where an opinion can change of, well, I think he did this or I think he did that. It's just flat out stating fact of what she saw or did not see. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't change. I mean, that's fact. That does not change. How is it that they can so easily jump from one narrative to another or one story to another and so seamlessly do it without really expecting anyone to ask any questions? And when they do, how do they react?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like there's this distorted perception of themselves and the scene and other people and what happened. And that can fluctuate over time as they craft the story better. And we can wonder, are they even consciously aware that this is what they're doing? Mm-hmm. Or it's just kind of an emotionally driven, as you say, they want to give a good story. And so it can just sort of evolve and shift and changes depending on the mood of the day, right? And what's gonna sound best.
And getting other people to go along with it. That's the other part. That's where you get the flying monkeys. Obviously, you have, I really didn't think of the attorneys as flying monkeys. I don't know if they really, they're near that category. They're paid flying monkeys.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yeah, they're paid to fly. Yeah,
they're paid to fly. These are the professional flying monkeys that are there to run her narrative. But then you have just people in their out of their free will not getting paid a dime, just wasting their own time or spending their own time, however you want to look at it. Some would say wasting, some would say you're wasting your life. But they're willing to go out there and do the bidding for this person. Most of them have never met her in her life. How does someone like this, especially in this sort of a case, because sometimes you look at this with flying monkeys and it's usually the narcissist friends or family that they'll spin the tail to, and they're already built in. They're ready to go. They're ready to run with this. In this case, it's strangers that have signed on to be flying monkeys. How do you do that? How do you get so many people behind a conflicted story that is way out there?
Yeah, you know, people are drawn to conspiracy theories, and you see that in politics. You see it in so many other ways in our society. It meets a need for people to, you know, feel like it's us versus them, and we're the good guys, and we're going after the bad guys. And I think that a lot of the, you know, we've talked about the podcaster Turtle Boy, and a lot of this has been whipped up in the media.
Yeah.
And it only takes a few people who start the ball rolling, and then you develop this conspiracy mindset in the whole community. And I have to say, it's surprising. It's you know, showing up with the signs and the, you know, the intensity that you see people having. It is like a political rally, and it's bizarre.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.